popping web snappers.
My spider sense is tingling.
Spider sense tells me I'm in for some trouble.
My spider sense is picking up trouble.
Anybody else's spider sense tingling?
Welcome to Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where we dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. I'm Doug.
And I'm Derek.
And is your spider sense tingling?
Yes, and I'm trapped in a prison of my own mind.
Of course, we would like to take a quick moment to thank our spectacular patrons, Bo, Carl, Katie, Jason, Zoe, James, Keith, and Cody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Speaking of Patreon, if you have been following along, a couple weeks ago, we opened up one of our Patreon episodes, or really just dropped it here on the main feed. And this is another one of those, and we're just continuing right where we left off. So a couple weeks ago, we covered the Superior Spider-Man issues 1-5 and some of the lead up to that. And what you're about to hear is our continued conversation about issues 6-10.
Yes. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome back, amazing friends, to another Spider Bite episode where we are once again talking about comics, which means we are once again talking about the Superior Spider-Man, Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body, being Spider-Man and just doing a real bang-up job of it.
There's certainly some banging, that's for sure. People are getting banged up, that's for sure.
Yeah. So we're talking about issues 6-10. Mm-hmm. So just the next 5 issues, which so far I think moving forward will probably just kind of always be the case. I think it breaks up pretty easily that way.
Yeah.
If you are reading on Marvel Unlimited, there is sort of like a little sneak issue in there that's issue 6 again,
doesn't
have anything to do with anything, so I don't think we're really going to talk about
it. No, I didn't read it. I mean, I saw the first page and I'm like, that's an AU thing, I don't care.
I got like 4 pages in and was like, oh, none of this is going to connect whatsoever. It makes no sense to have the Avengers in this episode given some of the things that are happening in these 5 issues.
I do think it's clever that apparently it was like Age of Ultron, which is timing works out for them when the movie came out, but Age of Ultron and Alternate Universe, so AU, like for both things. I thought that was clever. But I've never heard of that event, so obviously it couldn't have been that amazing to stick in culture at all. So anyway, that's the most I want to talk about that.
it's annoying. We don't, I mean, if you listen to us talk about comics, you already know all of our thoughts on this, so you don't hear them again.
It's
but
not that annoying since it doesn't take the spot of another comic from Superior Spider-Man.
Right. That is preferable, right? The only reason I bring up that at all is that this comic will say like continued in, or will say like next in, and you never need to follow those paths. Like you just need to read the next Superior Spider-Man. which is nice. I like that. It's great. But yeah, these 5 issues are kind of wild. There's like a couple like big things that happen. The last batch we had Doc Ock's version of Spider-Man killing a character named Massacre, which was a big deal, but it was sort of divisive because, you know, Massacre is this guy who is killing like dozens of people at a time. So even people who were like surprised that Spider-Man killed a guy were sort of like, yeah, but maybe it was better that that guy got killed? Question mark. These 5 issues kind of start with him beating the shit out of 2 villains who are barely villains in Screwball and some guy named Jester who are just like pranking people. And he just like beats them to a pulp.
And this is, I'm assuming, the first appearance of Screwball, right? Probably.
Oh, I didn't even think to check that.
I think it is.
I guess that would make sense.
Yeah. So what a way to be introduced is just like at the worst possible time as like, I'm a for fun villain. Oh, never mind. Not with the guy who wants to kill everyone.
Ugh. Yeah. And I think it's smart to do this following the Massacre situation.
Yeah.
Because even as we see, like, we saw people's reactions to that. And then we see like more, in the wake of that with Captain Watanabe, like questioning a bunch of police officers who shockingly just like lie about what happened. And so it's interesting to see something that's much more black and white. Yeah. Like, why the hell did Spider-Man just beat the shit out of these people?
Yeah. I think that they play it well because I think we talked about in the last time that I think that it was clear that they were trying to figure out exactly what Otto Spider-Man's voice is, but I do think they have his characterization pretty much down to a T, because this idea of like Otto, you know, approaching being Spider-Man in a sort of vigilante kind of like anti-hero-esque kind of way, like not exactly that, but in that sort of sphere, is he's still being, even though, you know, he has his, you know, reasons for having had Peter's experiences and learning empathy and thinking that he can be a superior Spider-Man, his reasons for doing that, but he is still at his core going to be driven by his own experiences, right? So like the things that are triggers for him from his childhood traumas are still going to be triggers in real life. So I think that I think Dan Slott has done a good job of figuring out like what triggers make sense for Otto. And I think, if we haven't heard it before, I'm sure over the history of comics, like Otto's past have come up, but even if it hasn't, it makes sense that Otto being like the super smart dude who's grown up to be incredibly egotistical about his brain to a point that he alienates people. Of course he was a kid who got bullied, He probably was the kind of nerd who like not only got made fun of, but probably also like was a little bit too big for his britches in terms of like, you know, he probably had the same ego as a kid of like trying to think he's better than everyone because of his brain, right? Whether that was true or not. So he has these childhood traumas of like being bullied as a kid. So the idea of being pranked and like and condescended to and disrespected in the Spider-Man version of him, it's going to set him way off, because all I can think of is being like bullied as a child. So of course he's got like villains that are like very that are just pranking people. They're like very unserious villains, but because they're pranking people, it almost sets him off worse than like a villain that's actually like robbing banks or whatever would.
That's such a good point, because a villain that's just really strong isn't one he's going to be like insulted by. If anything, he's going to be like, you're beneath me. But these ones, who otherwise would be beneath almost everyone else in sort of like the scope of what they do, are the exact thing that piss Otto off. And what's smart is like, I don't know the history of them showing Otto's past as a child, but when they were exploring the Peter and Otto being able to see each other's memories things, even before this, every once in a while you'd get a glimpse of Otto's sort of past, and it had some of this necessary buildup to this moment, whether it was like his relationship with his dad or in this case with other kids or whatever the case is. So continues just being smart setup, smart writing and stuff.
It's good because, you know, it's natural, of course, to have like, what if the Spider-Man is violent, you know, and how do people deal with that? But I like that it isn't just like, well, he is a villain, so he's just going to be mean. It's just like, no, they have found ways to justify why this is in character for Ock to be acting this way. Even when, like, to himself, he does kind of have... He is, to the best of his ability, kind of operating in good faith as Spider-Man to him, you know, the best that he can otherwise.
He still is trying to be Spider-Man. He's not using it as a disguise or a way to trick people. Like, he's trying to be Spider-Man.
Right.
And we see over and over him talking about being a superior Spider-Man. Right. So it's all really clever.
Yeah.
He ends up intersecting, though, with this other vigilante, Cardiac? Is that the name?
Cardiac, yeah.
I did not know this character.
I was familiar with him. I don't remember where or why, but he's one that I've known for a long time. I haven't read a ton with him, but yeah, I knew the vibe that he's just like very much like a, I guess vigilante is the right word. He's not really an anti-hero. He is like a straight up good guy. I actually really like him a lot, to be honest.
He's like a medical Robin Hood.
Exactly what it is. Yeah. He is a medical doctor who like is basically, you know, treating patients that like insurance won't cover or like hospitals won't take chances on, things like that, which fully in favor for. I fucking love it. Like I love that all of that stuff is included. I thought that was really fascinating and kind of really instantly endeared me to that character in this story.
Yeah, probably the least important part of this, but I love Cardiac's design.
Yeah.
It's such a cool, simple design. Mm-hmm. It's got this almost like, I don't know when this character was introduced, but it feels very like 90s in the sort of like sleek, weird sense, not the like lots of pockets and like cool edgy sense, if that makes any sort of sense.
Yeah.
Maybe 80s, 90s.
I think he was, I think he may have been 90s. I'm trying to think. I think the first time I ever encountered him wasn't even in a comic. It was in a, like an Ultimate Guide to Spider-Man book that I bought, but that was in like 2004 and he was in it. So he had, you know, obviously was introduced before then. So I feel like, he was probably like a late 90s character, early 2000s character, maybe. I don't know. We could easily find that out, but I don't feel like Googling it right now. Either way, it kind of checks out.
I know sort of like the narrative bits and plot reasons why he intersects here, but like, what do you make of this character intersecting with this story sort of like thematically, if at all?
Yeah, no, I think I actually really like it because I think the idea of Cardiac in a lot of ways is kind of, I think he's a really interesting foil to Ock as Spider-Man, because both of them are like these brilliant scientists in their own respective fields. And both of them are sort of going at being like a superhuman doing good in their own way that is not following the exact rules that traditional superhero heroes follow, right? Like Superior Spider-Man is being a lot more brutal and not showing as much mercy, which ruffles the feathers of the Avengers, rightfully.
Oh yeah.
And then Cardiac, on the other hand, is this medical doctor who doesn't believe that the way that the medical industrial complex works is correct, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like operating underground, and he is, for all intents and purposes, committing crimes in that he steals medical equipment. He's not afraid to technically like brutalize guards and stuff. He doesn't kill, but he is like beating the shit out of people to get this medical equipment, as nice as he's being about it. Like technically he is operating like as a criminal Robin Hood, or as a medical Robin Hood. He is technically being a criminal, but like not a criminal that we can root for, you know, like
criminal
all for good
in the
reason.
Sense, criminal in the sense that laws are threats. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's doing things that have consequences legally.
But in the same sense, like, you know, Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, like, technically, like, Cardiac is operating in good faith. And, like, you could make the argument that sort of, like, I mean, you know what? You're brutalizing people, but, like, that is a way of stopping crime. Like, I don't agree with it. But, like, you can logically justify both of what they're doing in the same way that you can also logically say that both of what they're doing is wrong, you know? So I think I like that sort of foil. And I do think for Ock as a character, like meeting someone, it's sort of like, oh, you know, this guy who I was sort of feeling disrespected by because I think everyone's beneath me. So someone that I assume is beneath me using my equipment for his own, you know, for his own personal gain or however I see it. Like, mm-hmm. I assume that's going to be bad, but then I realize like, oh, he actually is sort of doing kind of what I want to do, which is using his like vast knowledge and capabilities to help people. And that's all ultimately I want to do too, which is really interesting to see with Otto, who, you know, does still have some darkness to him when you see him do some terrible things. But like, I think it makes it clear that like at his core, this version of Otto that's had like, that's been influenced by Peter does have is still trying to do good. Even if he doesn't really go about it the best way all the time. Most of the time.
No, I love that because, I mean, honestly, just as a story, it's all really elegant utilizing these characters and these pieces to get where the story needed to go based on questions we had at the end of our last episode. So, like, just plot-wise, it's really elegant, but for it all to be elegant plot-wise and thematically is always impressive and always something I enjoy.
Yeah, I think the Cardiac stuff might have been some of my favorite stuff from this section that we read, because I think it like it doesn't necessarily go in the direction that you might expect it to, because I think it would have been really easy for a darker and worse version of the story to like continue on the path of Superior Spider-Man just being very violent in a Spider-Maning. He meets Cardiac, and Cardiac maybe is just sort of like this last straw where it's like, no, you fully brutalized and maybe even murdered a good man. But instead they like allow it to be sort of this moment of respite and a learning experience for Otto, just to like maybe take a step back a little bit and realize like, oh, there are other people who are also working in the same sort of shades of gray that I'm working in that are also doing good, like I'm trying to.
Well, it's interesting too, because we're reading this in retrospect, so we know that this story has to be carried for 2 years, but like at the time it is interesting to have that respite, because it's like, I don't know what folks knew. I don't know if they knew how long it was supposed to go, or if it was even supposed to go for very long. Yeah. So I wonder like what the reaction to that was, where it escalates and it escalates, and then there's this, and it doesn't go the way you expect.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They end up kind of like working together to save this little girl's life, which is cool. And then that like leads into this answer, albeit a very different answer than I would have expected, and a very sooner answer than I would have expected, to our question of like, when does Ghost Peter and Doc Ock like actually intersect in sort of like a front of mind, forward, everyone's aware type of way? This is an interesting way to get there. It makes sense, but I wouldn't have bet on it necessarily.
They sort of are constantly teasing like Ock is actually hearing more and more of what Peter is saying in his ghost form, and Peter is having a little bit more and more control as it goes along. Knowing that this went on for as long as I did expect there to be I didn't expect the Ghost Peter to be a factor up until the very end, just because it's like, I don't see how they could carry that for 2 full years. So I think that I figured that they had to do something with Ghost Peter to like make him either not a factor or change the status quo. But even with all that said, I still didn't realize that was going to come to a head so soon into the run.
Right, because now my question is kind of like my question at the end of 700, which is Amazing Spider-Man 700, which is like, okay, so you killed Peter, how does he re-enter the story? And now it's like, okay, so you killed Ghost Peter.
Yeah.
He still has to re-enter the story at some point.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's got to. And then how long is he going to be gone for? Because he really wasn't gone very long between 700 and whatever, like issue 2, if not even issue 1, you know?
It is. It's very interesting, and I mean, it's got to be frustrating as a reader just to be like, oh man, so like, how long is this going to go then? You know, but you know, knowing it as an endpoint, I think it makes it feel better. And also, it is like, I do like the idea of constantly like swerving, where it's just like, you think we've given you the perfect setup for how we're going to get out of this, and then we resolve that because Ock's just that good. So now you have no idea where it's going to go, and I'm sure there's going to be something else. Like, I would not be surprised if, you know, this investigation that Carly Cooper's going into is going to feel like it's coming to a head, where like, you know, she's unraveled the mystery, and then they're going to swerve from there, and then somehow she's convinced that it's not the case, or something gets undone or something like that. Like,
timing's just wrong, because she's like on track to solve the mystery, but if there's no conscious Peter to tap into or to do anything about, like, what does she do with that information?
Right. Yeah.
And if she can't prove it with that, like, how do people react to her?
Yeah. So, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see this like a couple of times before the run is over, where it's like, we almost made it. Like, we almost switched on the map. And then because Ock is the fucking good master planner, is just that good at it, like, find some way out of it, you know? Which puts a lot of pressure on how this ultimately resolved, because I truly have no idea. So it better be something amazing, but we'll see.
Yeah. I have no clue. I like that you mentioned the master planner aspect, because like, currently we're not seeing any sort of proactive master plan. We're just seeing the skills of Otto Octavius to like inform any sort of master plan. I love the moment where it's revealed to Peter and us that Ock knows he's in there, where he's just like, no, Peter, you won't. Like, he just responds to something Peter's like thinking, and Peter and ghost form is just like, wait, holy shit. Like, this is not good. Scary. You know I'm here.
It's scary. Yeah. I mean, a thing that I think I like about all of these issues is that I think they really do a nice job of balancing. Like, I'm feeling more and more endeared to this Ock Peter Spider-Man, you know, I'm feeling more endeared to him, but they still never let you forget. Like, at the end of the day, Doc Ock is a scary villain, and if he wants to be bad, he will, and he can, and he can be very scary when he does it. So like, it goes out, and it never feels, it doesn't feel like a whiplashy thing either. Like, it makes sense. Like, it's just, they're choosing particular moments. Like, of course, you know, at the end of the day, as much as Ock is, I truly do believe he is operating in good faith when he's trying to be Superior Spider-Man, he is still ultimately also looking for his own survival, and he is a selfish enough, egotistical enough person that if he sees that Peter's in his head, he's going to be like, well, I got to fucking wipe that shit out, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like a crocodile just below the surface of the water, right? Like, it's like, I don't know, it's going to attack something that it wants to eat, even if it is not currently doing that. And you can kind of, like, you get the sense that that's always there just under the surface. Yeah. I mean, you see it with Screwball and Jester. That was just there under the surface, you know? Yeah. That was not calculated like it was with Massacre. That was a moment of, I guess, weakness for what he's trying to be. And so, yeah, I agree. There's no whiplash there. There's just this sort of, like, sense of, it's not like impending doom. It's like impending, like, there's tension. An eruption that's about to happen. Yeah, it's, just tension.
I mean, you know, and you still get this little moment. It's like when he is lashing out against Screwball and Jester, the way that they sort of draw, they almost draw him, like, kind of monstrously. Like,
oh,
even
my
though
God.
He is still in Peter Parker's body as Spider-Man, they draw him like he's a fucking monster at certain points.
They also, since we're talking about just, like, how they depict that visually, it's so funny, question mark, to me, that, like, this comic isn't afraid to necessarily use blood, but it doesn't use it a lot. Yeah. Like, this is still a comic that has a particular, like, wide appeal, so they're never gonna have, like, a just brutal thing.
Right.
But I do love that for those sequences, there's just, like, paint splattered all over him, sort of in place of blood. So you still kind of get the sort of sense of, like, wetness and gore without it actually being
such a good point.
Bloody and gross.
Yeah, that's such a good
point.
And
his, like, costume's all torn and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that the moment where he, like, rips the eyes off of his own mask?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I screenshotted, because, like, they draw his eyes to just be, like, fully white and surrounded by black shadow. And he looks almost like a skeletal face underneath it.
It's great. There's also a joke in here, I think it's in this batch at one point, of where he makes reference to Peter Spider-Man constantly, like, webbing up his eyes.
Yeah.
I love those little things they, like, include in here where Doc Ock almost forgets that he's Spider-Man and then responds to a villain in commiseration over being beaten up by Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's talking to Jameson at that point, you know, Jameson. Yeah. is, like, complaining about it. Yeah, they're just both sort of, like, complaining about the when Spider-Man's annoying to both of them, and James is like, wait, what? But you are Spider-Man, excuse me.
There's also a moment where he gets annoyed by what villains are saying, and he's like, do I sound like that? It's really good.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that, I think it's the fourth issue we read, tickled a particular part of your brain, because it takes place almost entirely inside the consciousnesses of Otto and Peter.
Yeah. I always love that shit. I will say, I think that I have less love for this. It's really well done, but it's so sad and devastating that, like, it makes it hard for me to love it as much, because it really is.
Usually there's, like, an emotional victory as a result of these kinds of things.
It's very bleak and like, kind of brutal and, like, really brutal in a way that almost made me a little bit uncomfortable, like, to see it done to Peter Parker, you know? It's kind of cruel, actually. I think that's it. And it, I don't know. Like,
it's really rough.
It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I feel like maybe that's, and I don't know that I mean that to be a criticism, because, I mean, I guess maybe that's what they were going for. So, yeah, you accomplish that goal, but it made it, like, not really fun to read, because I was just very sad the entire time. And it's very,
I think, bleak. It's one of those things that you don't, like, you might expect from certain mediums and not necessarily others, where there's, like, that axis of, like, good quality and good fun, and sometimes things are both. Sometimes things are just fun, and sometimes things are, like, just good. I just saw the movie The Zone of Interest, which is very good, but it is not fun.
Yeah.
Like, the last time I sat in a movie like that was Fences with Denzel Washington. Oh, sure. Very good movie, not fun to watch. Like, it is uncomfortable the entire way through. And I totally get what you're talking about. And that makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, this is where he just, like, kills Peter's consciousness.
Well, he kills his consciousness. He, like, and it's like Peter, his consciousness not being able to remember Uncle Ben's name.
Oh,
and that's what it just felt cruel to
and
me.
Then they throw, like, a joke in there, like the Peter Palmer thing, and I was like, not the time, although clever, not the time.
Yeah, that's what it was, sort of like, okay, now it's just kind of over the line, because now it's just this sort of, like, they're just really truly destroying this character in front of me in every way.
I do think it is successful in its devastation.
It is, And I do, you know, the thing that I liked about the Spectacular Spider-Man intervention episode, like, where, like, all of his sort of friends and family are sort of, you know, standing behind him essentially and helping him, like, that's in this, you know.
I do love that full page panel of, like, Gwen and Mary Jane and Jameson and all these characters
Yeah.
just sort of, like, trying their best to, like, stop a very old school classic looking Doc Ock.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, and that's, this came after Spectacular Spider-Man, so I have to imagine some of that was influenced by that, by that episode too. So, or some of this issue is influenced by that episode. This is just sort of like the darker version of that, where everything goes bad and it doesn't matter, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I
love the cover with the brain, with Ock chasing Peter inside of his brain.
It's such a stark cover, and I remember seeing it. Like,
I've seen it before too. Yeah,
right. I this is one I've seen, and I think the reason it's so memorable is because it's so different than any sort of Spider-Man cover you would expect.
Yeah,
to the point that I was like, "Oh, this must be a variant," and it's not. Like, that is just the cover of this issue.
Yeah,
and I kind of always wondered about it, and now I fully understand why it is the way that it is.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's really it's not necessarily like the most like detailed, mind-blowing art on the cover, but it is certainly one of the most memorable Spider-Man covers I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really well done. I agree.
In that sort of mind space, it was very cool to see Spider-Man fighting Spider-Man, and interesting to see the way that, you know, the designs are distinguished so you always know who's who.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that made me the most uncomfortable, even more so than the devastation of it, was them ripping off their faces to reveal the Spider-Man underneath.
Uh-huh.
That was so graphic. Like, yeah, so bizarrely gross. Graphic.
Yeah.
It's really disgusting to think about.
Uh-huh. Yep. Oh, yeah. I screenshotted that one. It's so fucking wild. I mean, it makes sense thematically, right? Like, with Peter, he's doing it, I think it, like, looks cool. But then when Ock does it, it's sort of like, oh, this is who Ock truly does. This is the moment that confirms that Ock truly does identify himself as Spider-Man now, which I think is a significant turn from where this had been before.
That's really smart. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, that is really good imagery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We get like one issue after that happens where Ock is sort of like, all right, I'm Peter free now. So what are the consequences of that? And it kind of... It does a few things. It gives us a little bit of that sense of like how Ock would operate without Peter Parker sort of badgering him. We also get this moment where I thought was also kind of devastating in a different way, where MJ's club is attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And she just refuses to act because she has faith that Spider-Man Peter will save her, which
I have various
feelings about, but like just as it was presented, I was like, this is really sad. Like, for anyone, I know it's colored by the fact that this is Mary Jane and Peter and Spider-Man and all that context, but just like that sort of situation where somebody is almost just like not even acting to preserve themselves because they're so reliant or confident that that's going to happen. I don't necessarily love it for Mary Jane.
It's weird.
But the situation is a devastating one to see.
I understand what it's doing, and I think that it makes sense. Like, I do. Yeah, I think there's a certain devastating element of sort of like it's confirming that, like, you know, the original Peter is gone now. You know, and how that sort of affects the people around him. And I do like the idea that it's sort of like if you're someone who has lived so long in the world of Spider-Man and being Spider-Man's girlfriend / best friend / someone that he's always looking out for, that like that's going to make your skew your expectations for any time you're in danger because you've been in danger so often and are always rescued. It does just feel really still out of character for me for her to just like basically just
doing
be like
nothing.
Like I feel like she would still just try to get out but be confident while everyone else is freaking out that that she'll still make it out, but she'd still try. And I think that kind of speaks to what we were talking about.
Oh, that's such a good point. It could be that she is being selfless, but she's like putting herself in danger by like helping other people because she is confident that she will still get out no matter what happens.
Yeah, because I think
that's a good point. They totally could have done that.
I feel
that.
Like Mary Jane historically has always been a really proactive character, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it just kind of feels, it kind of speaks to, I think we were talking about in the last one where like, it does feel like this kind of this. I understand a lot of the complaints that people had at this time where it feels like Mary Jane is specifically being underwritten in favor of Carly being the proactive girlfriend in the situation. I think
it's annoying because it's unnecessary. Right, like I get why people would be frustrated too.
Yeah. Like both can be like, it's weird that Mary Jane is just sort of literally doing nothing. And it's sort of like, girl, you've been in the situation before, at least like help calm the other people and find an escape plan or whatever. And then meanwhile, it's like, but how here's the cool cop girlfriend who's solving the mystery. It's sort of like both of them can be doing shit. I don't understand why it's like one or the other. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is really, really bizarre. It's also interesting because, and I guess I can kind of piece together what to make of this, but she ends up being fine. And at first you are led to believe that she's fine just because like the firefighters saved her. Mm-hmm. But then they do reveal that like Ock like was monitoring enough despite attempts to sabotage his monitoring to like delegate certain tasks to certain services. And then like, basically he says that like he's who notified the firefighters. And so of course she's safe because of course everybody was doing their part. And it's in one way, a way to criticize Peter Parker for being like really kind of like, having a narrow focus.
Yeah.
But then it's also a little bit weird because part of what I think it was trying to accomplish was that sort of like broken sort of idea of I don't have to act because someone will save me.
Right.
And then it turns out like, well, yeah, he was still doing that.
Yeah. It's so it ends up being an unnecessary thing anyway, character thing for Mary Jane kind of anyway. Like, so it's just, yeah, it's a little, yeah. All of that. I wasn't a huge fan of. I like some of the ideas that are flowing around, but they don't really land.
I think that's it. Like the ideas, and it's the kind of thing that I think could be used for a story that's extremely successful and really effective. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it's like for these characters in particular, because I do appreciate, I don't know how to necessarily like put all of it into words, but there is a difference between her being saved directly by Peter Parker, because Peter Parker will always be there to save Mary Jane, and Otto Octavius sort of in the coldest way possible, just managing everybody's safety.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like she's still safe, but there's some sort of like soul missing from her being saved.
There isn't like this, the cool hero shot of Spidey swooping in and grabbing MJ and then them web swinging away together with her in his arms kind of thing, you know?
It's the difference between it being calculated and being like this heroic moment informed by, you know, being soulmates.
No, I think it makes sense. It's just sort of contrasting like, you know, what makes a classical superhero and the iconography of a classical superhero so appealing versus sort of like, yeah, maybe Ock is like operating more logically and more, you know, it more efficiently as Spider-Man. Yeah. But A, the stories are less fun, and B, yeah, like the soul is just kind of missing. And it's sort of like, well, why are you even doing what you're doing? It really just feels more like he's just doing a job, you know, working a day at the office and managing these things.
Yeah, we've compared this Otto Octavius to Nolan's Batman at certain points, and I think this is another example of that, where it's like, sometimes that Batman feels like he's effective, but he's doing things almost like out of purely obligation and like management of crime. And I think in those moments, like the sort of fascism informed Batman, we're not really supposed to root for his methods, even though we know the outcome is good.
Yeah.
That's a lot of this moment too, where it's like, yeah, you saved her, but like, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, because that's something that those Nolan movies, I think, kind of interrogate at certain points. And that is present here. Maybe not like to the exact same extent, but like it is definitely part of the conversation. Yeah, I, again, that's sort of like their way to sort of not just have Spider-Man just be a violent vigilante. It's just like there's this weird fascism element to it. And, you know, making you ask the question of sort of like, I mean, would it be better if he was a little bit fascist, if he saves more lives? I don't know. Yeah. You know, like that's always an interesting question. It makes sense to do with a character like Ock, who's very good at planning and delegating and, you know, making these different sort of, you know, branched out like backup plans and everything, how to operate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because Otto will consistently criticize Peter Parker's methods in his attempt to be the superior Spider-Man. And it, you like almost can't ever argue with what he's saying.
Right,
like, yeah. Peter Parker is messy. Peter Parker is often inefficient. Mm-hmm. Peter Parker often puts himself in danger in ways that you're like, oh, buddy, you're real lucky you didn't come out dead, you know? But you still are sort of like, leave him alone.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it better to be the superhero who's a little bit messy and inefficient, but is doing everything kind of by the best way you can imagine?
Yeah.
Or is it this sort of like cold, calculated, maybe technically doing more, but always on the edge of doing it a little bit wrong, or just constantly doing it a little bit wrong,
yeah,
in ways that like are fascist, or ways that are a little bit more violent, or, yeah, in ways that are he criticizes Peter for being reactionary mere issues after he beats, you know, these, yeah, two joke villains to a pulp.
Yeah. And Cardiac, he almost like, you know, destroyed everything that Cardiac had worked,
yeah,
for, just because he wasn't thinking through things, you know, or, mm-hmm, or made his like assumptions based on how he thought was the best way to operate as Spider-Man. So yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole camera situation is clearly, it's more baked into all this than I think I would have expected when it first was introduced, because we saw Goblin briefly at the end of, I think, like issue 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah.
And then it didn't really come up for a few issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would have been waiting months for any sort of like indication as to what, yeah, that was about.
And then it comes back up and again. Then, it's just another tease, basically.
Right. I know. It's like, wild. Okay, I mean, on. Goblin's right. Goblin's the one behind the fire. And then he's like collecting as Otto is wrangling up these gang leaders. Goblin, I guess, is like collecting all of their
goons.
Yeah, all their goons to create like this goblin army.
Sure.
I don't really know where that goes, but I do like we've mentioned this before. I do like the idea of Goblin versus Otto Octavius's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I think there's something interesting about that. Mm-hmm. I just don't know exactly what it will look like or if it will fully capitalize on that relationship.
Yeah.
I feel like it has to. Otherwise, why?
And I think they've been pretty smart about finding elements to capitalize on out, yeah, of Ox history and relationships. Yeah.
So also, I was tickled by the fact that, you know, 700 plus episodes into this story, or issues into the story,
yeah,
instead of episodes, into this story, Green Goblin is still trying to take over the underground from all the like gang leaders. And that was like his very first original story, was like coming in as a weirdo trying to take,
yeah,
over the underground between these like warring factions.
this time, look, he learned a lot. He learned a lot with all that fun cloning business.
Uh-huh.
And now he's coming at it with a different angle. So, you know,
yeah. I was really intrigued, I guess. So Green Goblin and Hobgoblin are both active in this, mm-hmm, in this story. Hobgoblin isn't really around, but is like a
referenced
presence within,
yeah,
certain elements. Yeah. I'm really intrigued by this thing that they briefly mentioned, that Hobgoblin is like selling people the aliases of,
yeah,
former villains.
I love
that. Sounds really interesting.
I love that idea. Yeah. I love
that. I don't
know
anything
so
about that.
No, I love that idea so much of, yeah, just sort of like almost like parodying the idea of like legacy supervillains, or the ways that so many,
yeah,
characters have the same name. Or it's just sort of like, look, this dude's dead or in jail. Like, what if you were, I mean, there's precedent for there being multiple versions of the same hero and villain. That's a different,
mm-hmm,
identity underneath it. So why not like capitalize on that? Like,
yeah,
that's so fun. It's like kind of silly, but like, I love it. And if you're
it's
gonna
fun and
it's,
funny,
and it's a clever way, I think, to use Hobgoblin, who I think if Green Goblin is present concurrently with him, like, it is hard to figure out exactly what to do with him, I think.
Yeah.
So this
Green
is
Goblin's got to take precedent. Come
right.
On.
So it's fun for Hobgoblin
or take priority
to do this weird sort of seedy underground thing. yeah.
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 It's good. It's, mm-hmm, good. Is there I forgot to look this up. The owl in this comic,
uh-huh,
just looks like a knockoff Wolverine. Is that has to be a thing that they've explored? Like, he literally has like the sort of mutton choppy things. He's got like the it's obviously meant to look like an owl, but the two sort of like spiky hair things, and he has three claws that seemingly, if not come out of his hands, are equipped to the backs of his hands.
Yeah. I mean,
this has to have been explored at some point, right? He can't just coincidentally look like that
a lot
in
of
this universe.
A lot of, I mean, I think it might be, and then they've just like played with it potentially, but I mean, a lot of, I mean, if you just do like a light Googling, it's just like people be like, conspiracy theory, they're the same person. Like,
oh, okay. I mean, I get I why. Think it they was, don't look I, enough for me to be convinced that there's a conspiracy, yeah. But I just, I was like, what is, this is I think wildly it was similar.
I think it was a, yeah, similar designs from coming around at the same time, and that just haven't really changed the both of them. So they probably just had fun referencing it, but I haven't yeah. really done anything with it.
I just am shocked that they didn't take Owl's claws away. That yeah, just seems like the obvious natural funny. Thing to do. Why hasn't Wolverine chopped his claws off? You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe that's happened. I don't know.
Maybe it's happened. I hope it's happened. I think the only other like major thing, I mean, there might be little things here and there that you want to bring up, but I feel like the only major plot thing that we haven't talked at all about other than referencing is just the intersection with the Avengers.
Sure.
I thought that was going to be like the main story for these five issues, yeah. And it's really not a huge, I mean, I enjoy that they have noticed.
I think that it's funny. I actually found it hilarious, the idea that it sort of like feels like it's teeing you up for a big Avengers Doc Ock war that's coming up, mm-hmm. And they even get a little bit of a fight sequence, and it's like, oh shit, like they figured his shit out. What's gonna happen? What is Ock gonna yeah. do? Is Ock gonna like kill all the Avengers? Is he gonna like send them to is he gonna send them all to another dimension, right. To get him out of his hair? Like, how's he got out of this? And it's just sort of like, we ran some tests and it turns out you're fine, we're sorry. And it's like, sorry for
it's
all the
wild. It's,
my favorite bit is they're like,
they're
sorry.
So dumb.
Yeah, it's like the least we could do, you know, it's, I don't know, I remember he like asked for like the data or whatever, like, it's the least we could do for all the trouble we gave you. And I'm like, I thought you were mad at him for like murdering people, like what are you talking about, like you fucking idiots,
right? Which, there's no adjudication, yeah. Here you like I thought you were gonna take him to task for how he's been acting. That's how you build it up,
yeah.
And then it truly was just like, no, we want to make sure it's you, and I guess if it's you, it's fine.
Yeah, it's like, what are you talking about? It's so stupid, but I found it to be so dumb that I thought it circled back to being funny. Like, I feel like it's because Ghost Spider-Man is watching at this point and it's like, oh my God, you fucking idiots. Like, he's saying, I think he's saying what we're all feeling, which I think implies to me that this is meant to be kind of funny, that it's sort of like that they were this bad at it, you know?
I mean, I love the subversion and I love that they just look like a bunch of absolute dumbasses. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. I guess if I look at the 10 issues we've read, it's not really that surprising, because it's not just what if Doc Ock faced all of the exact same sort of like conventional obvious things Peter Parker would, right? But it's interesting because they could have told a very interesting, sincere version of the Avengers are figuring it out, because they have that one conversation between Natasha and Spider-Man where she's like, I get that something's going on, because once you've killed somebody, you can't really like go back from that. And I don't think they make it really all that sincere or serious in this, but that idea that like different Avengers sort of like interpreting what's going on with Spider-Man
could be
interesting, right?
Yeah.
Cause you have a moment where Thor, I kind of went back and looked at that issue he was referencing, thinking it would be a bigger deal than it is. It's not really that big a deal. Mm. But Thor references having worked alongside Spider-Man and noticing something was wrong. So it's just funny, because they could have done something very sort of earnest with it and just chose this, which I think is ultimately much funnier and enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I think Peter's relationships with other people is more interesting than it would be with the Avengers, and I think they always have.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there was always, they needed to deal with this and get out of it, because Ock even mentions like, if Tony Stark or Hank Pym were there, like actual scientists, then I would have actually been fucked. I lucked out by this specific group of Avengers being the ones that were doing the tests, because they are not the smartest people on Earth that would have noticed like abnormal brainwaves or whatever, you know?
There's like the literal like interpreting the science, but I also think Pym and Tony would ask the additional question of like, okay, so if this is Peter, are you doing?
Yeah. Cool that you're not a Skrull that actually
maybe
raises,
not Tony, but yeah. Pym would.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's cool that you're not a Skrull, but this actually raises further questions. Like, what?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Also, the Black Widow thing, the red in your ledger line, isn't that like right from Age of Ultron, which was like happening at the exact same time?
Oh, maybe.
I think she
even
says
think
that.
That.
Like, that. I mean, that's not that that isn't, that, that is like a phrase that you use, I think. I don't think that you invented that, but I think that's an important line in Age of Ultron.
Interesting.
And there's also an Age of Ultron tie-in comic and they have this line, it's sort of like, okay. Well,
okay, well, that takes it out a little bit for me with that conversation that I otherwise kind of appreciated.
I appreciate it otherwise, yeah, yeah. But, you know,
yeah. I can't say that I have rewatched Age of Ultron in quite some time.
I can't say that I've ever rewatched it. I watched it once on my TV on streaming after hearing people didn't like it very much, and I was like, I don't really like it very much. Never revisited it ever again. So,
yeah.
No hot takes about Age of Ultron here from me.
I, for a minute, was just like, I had the entire of those movies just kind of like on a constant rotation, like while I did things.
Oh, sure, yeah. They're a good background.
I did
They're
that with like Star Wars
movies.
At one point. Yeah, exactly. So I know I have rewatched it, but
yeah,
not in a long time. So I didn't even remember that. Didn't even register.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, no, I think all of that bit was funny. You know, I will be curious though, because if he's still technically working with the Avengers, like, it has the opportunity for more weird things to come up. So I don't know. Well, it can't be the full resolution of the storyline, you know?
That's what's so interesting about this run happening when it is, because they have Avenging Spider-Man happening at the exact same time
as
this.
So weird.
Otto Octavius exists in that comic as Spider-Man. So there have to be other adventures with the Avengers happening while he is in Peter's body, and there's a part of, I don't think we have to go down that rabbit
I'm
hole
so not
to cover it
so
but
not
I
interested.
Am in, I'm so curious
yeah
I don't know that I will read it while we are reading this, but I might read about it, you know.
Sure.
And then eventually check it out. I'm not sure. I think the Avenging Spider-Man title is interesting in that it exists.
Sure.
I have not felt motivated to ever check it out until now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize that it crossed over with, or was happening at the same time as Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that's like the biggest selling point to me that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is definitely a weird. It's weird that that's how that timed out.
Yeah.
For sure.
This also does mean that the door is open for Tony and Hank to eventually, you know, cross this path again, right?
Yeah.
So it's not. I think this was smart because people had to ask the question, like. What is Spider-Man doing? And the Avengers certainly would be the ones to ask it, especially if he is part of the team at the moment. But yeah, they can kind of be off his back for as many issues as they want without having to broach the subject again. And then when they want to, they can just bring in Tony or Hank Pym.
Yeah. I do think that they have an easy out since they haven't intersected with those or really any like major scientists yet. Like Tony or Reed Richards or Bruce Banner or whoever the fuck, I'm sure you have an easy out for them doing the science to bring Peter back, some kind of magic negative zone, quantum, whatever, space stuff, time travel, whatever. There's an easy out because we haven't met them yet. Like in this story. So like, that's on the table. I wouldn't be surprised if we do meet them and then they do science stuff and it doesn't work. Like that's also possible too.
Sure. But there's so many possibilities, right? You have Tony, you have Pym, and you have Reed Richards. We also haven't seen Doctor Strange. If they really,
stuff.
If literally everything else fails, you've got the sort of cosmic, or not the cosmic realm, the sort of fantastical realm.
Yeah.
So like there's plenty of stuff they can do. It's smart that we haven't encountered those characters yet.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So
who we have not established who Carly was talking to, right? She's got someone that she's going to work with on the Spider-Man conspiracy, right?
That's right.
She talks to a Shadow. I thought at first that it was Yuri that she was talking to, because I feel like we see Yuri like right after that.
I think that was my assumption.
But I don't
know
if that was confirmed.
That was that in the very last issue?
I don't remember if it was the last issue, but it might have been. But I just remember because she's talking on the phone, and then it's like right after that, Yuri's like, "I'm back from leave," and I'm like, "Is that supposed to be?"
Oh, that was early.
Okay, never mind. So I don't know.
No. I don't think that negates what you're saying. It's just earlier than I remembered.
Oh.
It happening. It's only in like maybe issue 6 or 7 or something.
Okay, gotcha. Well, so when
that
so like,
investigation happens.
I'm not sure if that was
like wasn't
to
Carly
be...
listening around like the corner or something to those interviews with the cops?
Yeah,
because she calls it like the big blue wall of silence or something,
right?
Which I appreciated.
So I wasn't sure. Yeah, I did too. So I wasn't sure if that Yuri is the answer to that question, or if it's a red herring, or if I'm just conflating the two things. You know.
No, that's a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think maybe
we also
be Yuri. I don't, but we'll find out.
It could go either way. If it hasn't been revealed, they can do what you expect. They can do what you not expect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't really know what to make of this. We just haven't mentioned it. But the Anna, what is her last name?
Fuck. Yeah.
I want to say Falcone, and I know that's not it because that's a Batman thing. Is it Marconi?
I think it's Marconi. I think Marconi is right. But yeah, the romance with her and, and Ock.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
I mean, it is, I will say, one of the first things that we addressed when we started covering this was our initial trepidation over Mary Jane being involved in this story at all.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we said was like, it would be better if there were just an entirely different romance. And that is what Anna is, right? Yeah. I don't think Peter and Anna had much rapport. I don't think.
I don't know if they've ever
Anna
met
somebody.
I wonder if they, well, I guess they've met, maybe they know, it seemed like they were in class together. Cause I wasn't even sure if we've ever seen, well, if they ever even knew each other, or if they were first.
These are his PhD classes. So it's entirely possible that Peter wouldn't have interacted with Anna at all.
Yeah.
Or if they knew each other, like it wasn't anything.
Yeah.
Cause Anna's so. in the doctorate classes with Ock. Yeah. I mean, this is great. Give him a romance that doesn't jeopardize any sort of
mm-hmm.
relationships with Peter's previous romances and doesn't get into any sort of weird territory of people mm-hmm. thinking it's Peter and it's not Peter.
Yeah.
In a way that would be problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it speaks to Otto too, because, you know, pretty much we don't know a ton about Anna yet, other than that she's like very smart and very charismatic. And like her primary thing that they do is that like she's a little person and is often ostracized about that. And mm-hmm. I think that they do a nice job of playing that into Ock's characterization, in that as someone who was bullied as a child but also has great intellect, he I think has, if as soon as he has respect for someone's intellect mm-hmm. and as a person and shows respect to them, if they're disrespected but for any reason by someone else,
oh,
that's going to
yeah.
set him off.
Ooh.
So I think that, and because we're already seeing that a little bit, that like
he sees
her getting ostracized, and the first thing he wants to do is beat the shit out of him, and it's sort of like, and doesn't understand how Anna can just be chill about it. She's sort of like, I've heard all this before, like I don't give a shit. And it's sort of like, how do you not want to murder everyone around you? So like, there's plenty of opportunities for him to get set off because of her, you know.
Now. I already kind of liked the idea of Anna being part of the story. Now I kind of hope that Anna, because we know that Superior Octopus ends up being a character and story beyond mm-hmm. this story.
Somehow,
I kind of hope that like Anna is Otto Octavius Spider-Man's like
Mary Jane.
You know, Mary Jane. Like that would be great. I would like that a lot.
I'd like that. That would be cool. I hope so.
I think that'd be sweet.
I hope nothing terrible happens to her over the course of the next 2 years.
That is also my way of hoping or of saying that I hope nothing terrible happens to Anna Marconi ?
I think it's Marconi, yeah.
I think you're right. I think that is an astute reading of the situation for sure, that there is almost certainly going to be some sort of situation where Ock Spidey beats the shit out of or literally just kills somebody over Anna Marconi.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really funny if we got her last name wrong and it's not Marconi.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Anna. Just call her Anna.
Just Anna.
We know who it is. Just Anna.
Yeah. Just Anna.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be really interesting. And yeah, I mean, there's so many balls in the court right now, like everything with his PhD and stuff like that. I keep thinking, like, mm-hmm. whenever Peter inevitably gets his body back, like he's gonna have a PhD he didn't earn. What is he gonna do with that?
Is he going to, well, also there's the logistics of like when Peter eventually is back in his body,
has he finished,
does
the
he
PhD
have the full
yet?
Well, has he finished it, and does he have a full memory of what Ock was doing?
Yeah,
especially if his consciousness is in fact gone in some way, shape, or form.
I don't know.
He's not sharing the experiences, assuming he's not in the body anymore.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's a question. I mean, that's a question for a long way off. A more immediate question is like, Peter's consciousness is gone, but that the implication is that, well, no, it's not even implication. I think explicitly Ock says that Peter's memories are not in his brain anymore. So he can't just go into the old filing cabinet and look mm-hmm. up stuff, which, he's lived in Peter. I think the thought process is he's lived as Peter long enough to understand what his life is now. So that's enough to continue operating as Peter and be fine. But
copy
inevitably
and paste some of those files, you know?
Yeah. Inevitably, he is going to run into situations where it would have been helpful to open that Peter file. He doesn't have it. And I'll be very curious how that's going to go.
It really almost makes me wonder if this body is the one he will continue to have, and Peter will somehow.
We got a new body.
Kind of talked about this when we were just sort of like throwing out possibilities of like how this could be resolved. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if there is, if Peter truly no longer exists in this body, I have to wonder if this is just Otto's body moving forward.
And they just build a new body for Peter.
Somehow, in some way.
It's happened. He could be birthed. He could like turn
find
into
find another clone.
grab another clone and put his memories into it. Get a giant spider that like births Peter again or something.
Oh my
god!
Like,
you can do that. Yeah. Plenty of ways.
What body are we on?
Yeah, right. Pull him out of the somewhere out of the Spider-Verse and just swap out his memories.
Yeah.
That is an interesting thought, though. That would be a solution. I guess
it's very funny for anybody who's already read all this or knows all the story beats, because we truly don't know.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I hope it's fun and not frustrating to listen to.
Oh, me too. Oh. I was going to say the solution. I hope is fun and not frustrating.
Oh,
but
well,
yeah, both.
Too.
Both.
Too, yeah.
I personally think it's fun to know something a podcaster doesn't know, and be like, oh, you're going to have a fun time when you find out this, you know?
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah.
Anything left on the table here with these five issues?
I don't think so. Yeah. I'm just fascinated by all of this. This comic still is like not at all what I expected it to be in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I do like that it feels at this point truly unpredictable, because there's plenty of things that are set up and they could easily go in a natural direction, but I don't feel like anything in this narrative has gone exactly in the direction that I expected it to go in, which is really exciting. So, you know, the goblin, I guess, is going to be a thing, but I don't know if we're immediately going to start seeing goblin stories or if it's going to be another six issues and another tease. We'll see about that. I'm worried, curious/worried about the Carly stuff, because she can't figure it out too soon, because it's going to run for a long time. So, like, I hope there's not a bad end to that.
Well, that's the thing that's weird, is that she kind of has figured it out. It's just not...
Yeah.
She doesn't really know what to do with it. Like, no one, who's going to believe her? So, like, I was shocked that she basically knew what was up as fast as she did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you do with that? Yeah. How is she just going to know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's safe for her to know, because it's truly an unbelievable situation, but weird narratively to have her know so early.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very curious. So, I don't know.
I don't know.
And I like not knowing. That's what's fun.
Oh, it's so much fun. Well, just like last time, in about a month, we will talk about the next five issues, presumably. I didn't look to see if the next collection was five, but I assume it is.
Yeah, just
five or six, whatever it is.
Whatever the third trade paperback was when it consists of, and that's what we'll be reading.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
That's what we're reading.
And look at our with the schedules that we post on Patreon, and we'll say which one we're doing.
We're gonna be flying through this, because that will, once we hit the next episode of talking about this, we've basically covered a year of this comic.
Yeah, it's funny that when we actually do this regularly, we get through them more quickly than you would expect.
The power of scheduling what we're gonna talk about is pretty powerful. So I'm excited, because that means, you know, we'll have covered the full like 2 years of this story in the first half of the year, and then we can tackle another big thing.
Hell yeah, I'm excited.
So all right, well, if you're listening to this, you're a patron, thank you so much. And be sure to check out other stuff that's happening here on the Patreon. Keep an eye out for the schedules, those monthly schedules that Derek started to make with all the stuff that we are going to be talking about moving forward.
Cool. See you next time.
Wild how Peter Parker just doesn't exist anymore, right, guys? Hope you enjoyed that. You know, it's all Patreon here this week. So if you want more of that conversation, we should have four parts out over on the Patreon. So there's two more episodes of us talking Superior Spider-Man. You can find those at patreon.com/whoppingwebsnappers. And of course, check out our Discord. There should be a link in the show notes. You also can find the two of us all over the place. Derek, where can people find you and the stuff you're working on?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Derek B. Gale. That's where I'm most active, but I'm on other platforms under either that name or Dare Bear, Mr. Dare Bear. I'm not hard to find. You can also find my podcast Gimmicks, which I do with my co-host David, where we look at the high concept and experimental structure-breaking gimmicky episodes of TV. I am also on Lee Carvalho's Potting Challenge, which is a Simpsons gaming podcast that I do with my co-host Tommy, where we were going through all of these Simpsons tie-in video games chronologically. What about you, Doug?
You can find me all over the place at Ickyboole, I-C-K-Y-B-O-O-L-E-Y. You can also listen to me on another Glitterjaw show called Novel Gaming, where my co-host Katie and I catch up on all the books, video games, and sometimes other media we've been consuming lately. And there is a Novel Gaming YouTube channel. Also, if you haven't gotten enough of me and Derek this month because we're off, you know, you can go back about a month ago. We guessed it on Mostly Speaking Sentai talking about Toei's Spider-Man show. So if you haven't gotten enough Spider-Man from us, that's okay. There's a little bit more over on Mostly Speaking Sentai. If you'd like to find other queer creators who talk about media, check out the Glitterjaw Queer Podcast Collective at glitterjaw.com. That includes our new monthly podcast, Skryonk, a Godzilla movie marathon, where we are stomping through Godzilla's filmography. Our episode on the beloved Godzilla versus Biollante is out now.
Yes.
Visit us on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com. And of course, follow Walloping Web Snappers on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod, or email us at wallopingwebsnapperspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe on all podcast platforms. It helps people find us. On May 4th, we will be back with a special Star Wars Day episode. Or is it Star Wars? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. With the hosts of Distant Echoes, Cass and Tommy. See you then.
See ya.
Look on my Spider-Man.